The sight of her house nearly brought her to tears again. A fire had burned nearly constantly in the hearth for as long as Helwes had lived, and in its absence birds had already begun nesting in the chimney, digging out tufts of the thatch. Squirrels chased one another over the flagstones that led to the door. It was shocking how quickly the world had moved to reclaim her home. It looked as if she'd been away 2 years, not 2 days. She shook her head. It didn't matter. It was just a pile of wood, wattle, daub, and thatch. If her father and mother weren't there, she didn't want to be either. The thought made her heart sick for her father. She looked up at the silver of the moon, starting to give way to the dawn. Surely, if she went to Siggeir's first, the mayor would let her see her papa? Just for a moment, just long enough to embrace him and feel that he was alive. Then she would face the tinkers. She needed to see her father. For strength. She lifted her skirts and hurried on, angling away from her house, away from the tinker's workshop, toward the mayor's instead. She couldn't bear to face any of the tinkers now, least of all Basina. The very thought made her stomach clench. She ran faster to chase the thought from her mind, focusing her eyes on Siggeir's tinned gables, growing closer through the trees. It was still so early that there was no one about to see her, and she ran faster still, hope blossoming in her breast. Maybe Siggeir would let her stay with her father for just one night. He could go and tell the tinkers that she was well and safe, and that they need not search for her, and maybe it would be best for all if she just stayed in his cellar with her father and— The sentry horn sounded, low and long. It was Harald Brewer's voice that carried faintly on the wind, calling out the warning. "Ware riders! Cloaks and flails! Cloaks and flails!" Helwes stopped so quickly that her heels dug up the ground, nearly sending her tumbling. She glanced back in the direction of the tinker's workshop. She had run far from it, and the way back led her past the sentry tower and directly into the path of the riders. It was a shorter run to Siggeir's house by far. Sick terror churned in her belly, making her arms and legs feel leaden, slow. Helwes ran into the trees, angling straight for Siggeir's front door. The branches pressed against her as if they wanted to hold her back, deliver her up to the order. She pushed through them, bursting out of the wood and racing the rest of the way to the split-rail fence along the flagstone path to Siggeir's door. The horn sounded again. "Throne be praised! The Emperor's own are come to us!" Harald called. He would only be shouting that if the order could hear him. That meant the riders were entering the village now. They must have been coming at a gallop. Helwes let her momentum carry her into the thick goldenwood door of the mayor's home, striking it with her shoulder hard enough to rattle her teeth and make the brass fittings tremble. She pounded her fist on the door, fighting the urge to cry out, careful not to make a noise that might alert the coming riders to the presence of a girl of 16 winters here. "Papa, Papa, please, open the door," she whispered to herself. "Please!" She stepped back, waited. Nothing. No one was coming. She knocked again as loudly as she dared. Silence. The horn again. Harald didn't call this time, which meant he had sounded the horn and immediately gone to the ladder, was coming down from the tower. The riders were in the village. She could wait no longer. They would likely ride straight here, address the mayor as was customary. She had to be gone by then. Helwes turned and ran for the tinker's workshop. She could feel Twitch bouncing in her pocket, put a hand inside to steady him. Her breath was coming harder now. She was whispering in spite of herself, couldn't stop, over and over. "Sacred throne, protect me, Emperor, hear my prayer." Hoofbeats. The pilgrims. She was gasping so loudly that it was hard to tell if they were coming closer or moving farther away. Best to keep running. The track to the workshop rolled out before her. She could make it. Shouts, the hoofbeats sounding louder, a jingle of spurs, of iron chain. There was a loud stomp, and suddenly a wall of black rose up before her. Helwas dug in her heels, still ran into it, her forehead banging against something soft and warm and firm. She reeled back, the smell of leather and horsehair filling her nose. Helwas Factor. Helwas followed the voice up the back of a tall, black horse. The same blazing eyes, the same tucked chin. The faintest hint of a yellowed splotch, a bruise, nearly healed. Brother Tone grinned fiercely. The Emperor's will is always done. Sooner or later. Stupid, 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 she cursed herself over and over. She had to try to see her father. If only she had done as she was supposed to and gone back to the tinker straight away. Helwas turned to run, saw more horses all around her, their legs a shifting forest she could not hope to escape. Gray cloaks swirled on their riders' backs. The flails were down now, heads dangling from their iron chains just above the earth. If there had been 10 pilgrims in the village when Tone had threatened Basina, there were 10 times that number now. It looked to Helwas as if every pilgrim she'd seen on the road to Hammersdown was here. A slash of red emerged from the swirling gray. The sojourner, his flail alone still hanging over his shoulder. Eyes widening as he recognized her. "The throne's providence," he whispered. "Indeed, Holy Father," Tone agreed. "If the child is here, the father can't be far. That tinker was hiding something I know. The mayor, too. I will put them both to the question. They will tell us where they are." "You have much to learn," the sojourner smiled. "There's no need to question anyone. Make the girls scream loud enough and the parents will come." Tone looked up at the sojourner, frowning. "Holy Father?" "What does the writ tell us, Brother Tone?" the sojourner asked. "The Emperor is more pleased by one hair snared than the scent of two." "Yes, Holy Father." Tone jerked his flail into the air, sending the head swinging toward her. The sudden motion made Helwa's guts turn to water, and she did scream. A tight shriek of "No!" loud and piercing. "Oh, please, Papa, don't hear me. Please don't come," she thought. It was Sigir's voice that shouted answer. "Helwas!" the mayor called, racing toward her from the sentry tower. He must have stood the watch himself that night. Wasn't home to hear her when she banged on his door. "Helwas!" Behind him came most of the village men, Sald and Pock, Harald and Danad, others. Many of the women, too. She could see Chansia and Basina, but not Barnard and the Tinker Boys. Perhaps they were still out looking for her. There were more villagers than had frightened the pilgrims before the knitting, but this time the order numbered as many as the villagers, all in their saddles, flails at the ready. They circled warily, keeping Helwas boxed in, more than enough of them to watch her and the gathering crowd at the same time. Sigir reached them and tried to push through regardless. "Helwas!" he called to her. "It's all right, girl!" Tone wheeled his horse, pushing Sigir back with one iron-shod boot. "You lied to me." He sounded genuinely hurt. "You lied to the Emperor's own." "I am mayor here," Sigir shouted, as if that made a difference now. "It's as if you lied to the Emperor himself," Tone said. "You said she had run with her father. Where is he?" "Helwas," another voice, choked with tears, winded with running. Even through the panting, she recognized it. Her father. Her father running to save her. "Get away from her, you damned cowards!" Samson shouted. His hair was wild and his clothes filthy, and even from here, Helwas could smell the stink of shit on him. The privy. That's why he didn't answer the door, she thought. He was hiding in the privy.
Give me my daughter!
Samson shook his fist, light flashing from a long, broad-bladed knife. He swung it as he came, reaching for Tone, but her father was a pikeman, trained to the long spear. The blade was clumsy in his hands, and Tone touched his spurs to his horse to move out of the way, tapping him on the back with his flail butt as he went. Samson stumbled to his knees, wrapping his arms around Helwa's. She buried her face in his neck, ignoring the stink, feeling the throb of his pulse and knowing that he was alive.
Papa, she whispered, you came.
Samson squeezed her tightly before leaning back, running his fingers over his face.
You're all right? They didn't hurt you?
She nodded so quickly her chin touched her chest.
They didn't hurt me, Papa.
Oh, Samson, Sigir sighed. You great fool. You've killed us all.
Brother Tone reined his horse around again, closing the circle of pilgrims up.
Samson Factor, he said. The Emperor provides.
Samson stood, tucking Helwas behind him. He held the knife out in front of him. It looked tiny and useless, surrounded by the forest of ready flails. Tone smiled.
I thought I was going to have to put at least one person to the question to find out where you'd gone. And here you are, in the common. I can't believe you didn't flee this place when you had the chance.
Tone moved his horse toward them, reined back at a thrust from Samson.
Come on, you bastards, her father whispered. Come on.
Brother Tone leaned forward in his saddle and pointed at her father.
I told you I'd come back for you. Did you think me a liar?
Enough, the sojourner said. Kill him and let's be done.
Brother Tone stiffened.
The mayor, too, your eminence. He lied to us. This is his village, and it is for him to ensure his people keep to the emperor's writ.
Here I am, you cowardly bastard!
Sigir pushed against one of the pilgrim's horses, trying to force his way into the circle.
Come down, off that mare, and leave your flail. We'll see who the emperor favors.
Tone laughed.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
To brawl with one of the emperor's own, drag us down into the mud with you. The emperor chooses who he will, and births us into the stations that fit our souls. Mine is to bring his word to you benighted savages, to ensure that you don't open the gates of hell and condemn us all. Yours is to lord over those who scratch in the dirt, and make sure you keep us in food, clothing, and implements of war.
Enough!
The sojourner shouted at Tone. The mayor, too. Have it done.
He turned his horse away. I ride on. Attend me when you are through. Her father and the mayor. After all this, they meant to spare her. They would kill her father and Sigir and leave her alone. Before she knew what she was doing, Helwa's bent, picked up a rock and threw it. Her aim was good, honed by years of skipping stones off the pond. The rock sailed through air, suddenly gone thick, seeming to move slowly, all eyes turning to follow its path. It smacked into the side of the sojourner's head, knocking his hood askew. His horse shied, and he yanked on the reins, angrily pulling the animal around, fumbling at the scarlet cloth suddenly drawn across his face.
Coward!
Helwa shouted, you tell your man to kill people and then you can't even bear to stand around and watch it. The sojourner finally yanked his cowl back into place and glared at Helwa's.
Idiot girl! What do you think you're doing?
She knew what she was doing was foolish, that she would only make matters worse, but it didn't matter. She was enthralled to the rage now, the anger as sudden and hot as an oven given a blast from the bellows. I was in your stupid knitting. And there was no wizardry. You lied because you wanted to kill and steal. You're not holy men. You're just a bunch of brigands.
You will shut your mouth.
The sojourner's face had gone as scarlet as his cloak. Helwaz was dimly aware of the danger, of the gathering frost in the sojourner's eyes, flecks of black gravel that darted left and right, taking in the pilgrims, all watching their master challenged by a little girl.
"You will learn your place," the sojourner snarled.
But Helwaz couldn't stand aside. Even if the burning rage would allow it, she realized now that something had broken inside her when she'd stood beside her father and watched Hammersdown burn. It might have healed in time, but the look in Basina's eyes had ensured the fragments were so small and so scattered that they could never be pulled together. She raised her fists, took a step toward the sojourner's horse, and the animal shied a second time. "My place is between you and my father." The sojourner's head followed his eyes now, jerking side to side, desperately searching the faces of his pilgrims, the villagers around him.
"Someone, deal with this child."
It was a command from deep in his throat, a mummer's voice, designed to preach to the far corners of the giant nave at Lees. But no one moved. The pilgrims looked down at their saddles, at the ground below them, at the villagers, anywhere but at their master.
"So be it," the sojourner said.
"Here we see the red among the gray. I will do the deed myself."
"No," Sigir said, ducking under a horse's neck and dashing out in front of the sojourner. "She's just a girl."
But the sojourner's flail was coming off his shoulder, the butt thumping into Sigir's stomach, driving the mare to his knees. Helwaz watched the sojourner dig in his spurs, the huge muscles of his horse's shoulders bunching as the animal plunged forward. She dimly heard her father shouting, leaping to save her, waving his knife, sharp and deadly and too short to be of any use at all. She could see Barnard and his sons now, coming at a run at the edge of the circle, too far away and not fast enough to do any good. The moment stretched out as Helwaz realized how tiny she was, how empty her hands were, how far the flail reached. She watched the black iron spikes on the head spin slowly into a blur. As time seemed to slow, her mind sped up, choosing and dismissing a dozen strategies. There was no way she could outrun a charging horse. Helwaz stood where she was and closed her eyes. It would hurt, but only for a moment, and then it would be over, and she would never have to face Basina or her family, would never have to lie awake thinking about Hammersdown and what she could have done to save it. She reached into the pocket of her skirt, hoping to stroke Twitch one last time. The mouse was gone. She heard the flail head jerk on its chain, could feel the air as the black iron spikes spun through, cutting their way to her head.
"Stop!"
When Helwaz was little, there'd been a storm, so loud and so terrible that she swore it was happening right over her house. The thunder rang so powerfully that the air vibrated, making the wattle shake and her ears hurt. The shouting voice was as loud as that thunder, and Helwaz winced in spite of herself, opening her eyes. She watched the flail jerk up, the head bouncing on the end of its iron chain, spikes nearly close enough to brush her nose. The sojourner had turned, staring open-mouthed at the circle of villagers, parting to admit a single man. Clodio. The old ranger seemed to glow. His clothing was still ragged, his skin still as brown and cracked as old leather, but it was different now, like the look of well-worn tools, hardened from use, stronger than ever. Clodio seemed taller, his thin limbs longer, his eyes brighter. A tiny mouse sat on his shoulder, perched on its hind legs, little muzzle thrust into his ear. Twitch. Twitch gone from Helwa's pocket to get help.
"You will not harm her," Clodio breathed.
The sojourner snarled into the silence.
"Now, all see why we are here. A wizard among us, standing in our very midst."
He stood in his stirrups, holding out his flail. He was pale, and Helwas could see the ruffling of his cloak where it masked his trembling leg, but his voice was steady enough.
"You will kneel and submit to the Emperor's justice."
"No," Clodio smiled, "but you will submit to the winds beyond the veil. You will ride out, and you will harm no one. And should you come again, I will not be so kind."
The sojourner dug his spurs in savagely, raising his flail.
"Cleanse the filth!" he cried,
and the pilgrims took up the call. Samson and Sigir and all the villagers forgotten, their horses wheeling and plunging toward the lean old man, who stood with his arms outstretched, grinning like he was mad. Clodio swept his arms up, and Helwas heard a rustling, a sound like the ripping of fabric, so loud that it made her ears ring. All around them, the earth exploded, clods of dirt and rocks flying into the air. Helwa saw tendrils of something flail upward, writhing like gray snakes. After a moment, she realized what she was seeing. Roots. The thick taproots of trees breaking free of the ground and waving in the air. The pilgrims' charge halted as the horses screamed in terror and plunged in all directions, ignoring their masters sawing on the reins, dragging the bits until their mouths bled. The sojourner alone kept his horse straight on, swinging the flail about his head.
"Fall before the
Something long and dark lashed out, slamming down on his horse's neck, hard enough to send the animal crashing into the dirt. The sojourner kicked free, tucking into a roll that snapped the brooch at his breast and ripped the scarlet cloak from his shoulders. He came up on his knees, spurs flashing, the flail crosswise in his hands. Helwas heard a creaking groan and ripped her eyes away from him. Two of the giant oaks that ringed the common had detached themselves from the line of woods and advanced on the pilgrims. One raised the long branch it had used to crush the sojourner's horse, sending it sweeping into the pilgrims' ranks, bowling them from their mounts like straw dolls, sending them flopping into the grass. Tone dug his spurs into his horse's flanks and turned it sharply, charging to his master's defense. The second tree followed, slamming a branch into the earth so hard that Helwas felt it shake, showering them all with leaves and acorns. Tone's horse shrieked, rearing and plunging, lashing out with his hooves so hard that Tone abandoned all hope of control, concentrating only on keeping his seat. The trees spun and lashed, branches rising and falling like threshing flails, leafy crowns shaking above them. A few of the pilgrims tried to fight, their iron flail heads digging furrows in the thick bark, but the trees showed no reaction. Their thick roots slithered up from the ground, yanking the pilgrims down to the earth and crushing them there, until Helwas heard the crunching of bones, and the men lay still beneath their gray cloaks. The villagers scattered, streaming back as if the common had been set alight. Only Helwaz and Samson remained, huddled together in the common center, Samson desperately trying to shield them from the trees. He needn't have bothered. The trees whirled and struck, wreaking havoc among the pilgrims, but they were careful not to come near the factors, their branches only ever reaching toward them to snatch away a pilgrim who tried to make for the sojourner, who was even now rising to his feet, lifting his flail to strike. Clodio, still grinning, dropped his arms and advanced to meet him. The sojourner swung his flail over his head like an axe, and Helwaz cried out, certain that Clodio would have his head crushed like Alna Shepherd's. But the ranger snatched his hatchet from his belt and swept it up, parrying the blow, twitching the head so that it tangled in the flail's chain, holding it fast. He leaned in close, grinning wider. The sojourner grunted, eyes wide, desperately trying to pull the flail free, but Clodio might as well have been a tree himself for all the good it did him. The flail scarcely budged as Clodio slammed his head forward, the hard front of his skull smashing into the sojourner's teeth, snapping the man's head back. Blood sprayed from the sojourner's mouth, and he staggered, eyes still wide but glazed now, confused. Clodio shook his head, teeth dropping from where they'd been lodged in his skin. He leaned in close to the sojourner. "Where's your emperor now?" He twitched his wrist, and the hatchet slid out of the flail's chain, spinning in his hand. He drew it up and yanked it forward, burying it almost to the haft in the sojourner's chest. The sojourner staggered backward, eyes still unfocused, sinking to his knees as a stain of darker red spread across the scarlet of his tunic. Tone shouted, sawing his horse left and right. All around him the remaining pilgrims cried out, pointing at their fallen master. Clodio locked eyes with Tone, smiled. "Run along now." He put a boot on the back of his hatchet head, still buried in the sojourner's chest, and shoved the man onto his back. The sojourner sprawled in the grass and was still. The pilgrims turned and fled. The few who were still mounted slapped their horses into a gallop, but most just ran, clumsy in their heavy armor, flail heads bouncing over their shoulders. Tone cried out to them, cursing them for cowards, calling on them to stand in the emperor's name. They ignored him, and at last he cursed and turned his horse, galloping to their head, leading them out of the village. The trees followed, tottering on their slithering roots, trailing black earth behind them. They struck down two more pilgrims before they stopped at the common's edge, suddenly going still. The common, too, was still, the shredded grass strewn with blood and freshly turned earth, littered with corpses wrapped in gray cloaks, flails snapped like matchwood, horses with broken legs screaming out what life remained to them. The villagers stopped their running and pressed back around the common's edge. Samson slowly straightened, his arms still wrapped around his daughter. No one spoke. All eyes were locked on Clodio. Twitch finished his whispering and leapt from Clodio's shoulder, scampered in a straight line across the churned earth, light and fast as an arrow. Helwaz felt his tiny claws scrabble up her leg, across her hip, and into her pocket. Her hand chased him in of its own accord, and she stroked him with her little finger, feeling him soft and warm and trembling. Clodio stood swaying for a moment, eyes unfocused. At last he blinked and looked at Helwaz.
"Are you all right?" "Oh, Clodio, thank you." "Are you all right?" he asked again. "I'm fine," she said. "Are you?"
That
is the greatest wizardry I've ever worked.
He waved, knees trembling. He swayed again, looked as if he might fall. Helwaz tried to run to him, but Samson's arm around her waist stopped her.
No!
Her father hissed. Helwaz pulled against his arm, confused. Clodio had saved them.
Let me go! She is a wizard, Samson said,
and Helwaz realized with a start that her father didn't understand what wizardry really was. None of them did.
It's all right, Papa, she said, pushing against Samson's shoulder, trying to break free, but his grip was like iron.
It's all right, Clodio said, looking at Helwaz. I just need to rest. Twitch is back with you?
Helwaz stroked the tiny mouse in her pocket.
Yes, he's here. Oh, Clodio, I'm so sorry. Tell me you'll be all right.
Fine.
Clodio was already turning, lurching like a drunken man, his legs folded beneath him, and he sat down hard.
Just going to rest. Stay with your parents. It's all right now.
Helwaz flailed behind her, struggling to break free. She had wanted nothing more than to see her father again, and now, with his arm around her, all she wanted was to break free.
Clodio! She shouted.
Clodio slumped on his side, one of his legs kicked feebly.
Sa-ra,
he rasped. Helwaz felt hot tears running down her cheeks.
We have to help him!
We have to stone him, Salt Grower shouted. He's a wizard!
Shut it, Master Grower! Helwaz shouted, her cheeks suddenly hot. He saved your life!
What do we know about such a sickness? Sigir asked.
He had walked up beside her family, the village coming behind him, gazing awestruck at the wreckage Clodio's wizardry had wrought.
How can we mend him?
We have to try, Helwaz said. Let me go, Papa. He's my friend.
He's friend to us all, Barnard said, or he was. He's a wizard, Samson whispered. You have to beware the blight.
There's no blight, Helwaz shouted, shaking free of her father at last.
She spun on the villagers, her face red and heart pounding. Behind her, her friend was dying, and all they could do was stand there like frightened children.
I was in Clodio's camp last night. He made me a divan out of grass, and nothing bad happened. The order tells everyone that wizardry is evil, but it isn't. He just used it to save your lives.
Evil may be used to a good end, Sigir said.
The writ says... It doesn't matter what the writ says, Helwaz shouted,
her cheeks burning, the anger blazing in her chest once again. Sigir flinched back from her, though he was a man grown and at least twice her size.
He's our friend, and he helped us, and now you have to help him. Where's Deuteria? Someone help me get him inside.
Helwaz, Sigir said, he cannot stay here. He is a wizard. The order
is beaten. Didn't you see they are gone?
They will come back.
Then Clodio will be rested, and he will beat them again, and this time we'll help him. We don't have to be frightened anymore. Don't you see? We don't have to knit anyone. We have to help Clodio get better so he can help us again if the order comes back.
Helwaz! That is heresy! Samson shouted. You will be quiet!
I will not be quiet! Helwaz shouted. I'll help him myself if you won't.
She whirled, narrowly escaping her father's grasping fingers, raced to Clodio's side.
She has a point, Samson, Barnard said. Whether we turn Clodio out or no, the Order will be back for vengeance. Our best chance to stand against them is to make Clodio well. "There is no standing against the order," Sigir said. "We must flee."
"We just stood against them," Helwa shouted as she knelt down over Clodia. "We stood and won." Samson shouted as she cradled Clodio's head in her hands. The ranger's jaw was slack, a thin strand of drool leaking from one corner. His eyes stared sightlessly past her shoulder. His chest heaved, breaths coming sharp and short. Samson charged forward 3 steps and stopped short, terrified to touch Helwa's now that she held the wizard's head in her hands.
"Helwa's! Come away from him at once!"
"Look around you," Helwa shouted back. "Do you see any blight? Where is the rot and horror? Where is the fire? He needs help." The villagers looked around them at the silent trees, roots still trailing dark earth. The wind sighed in their boughs, sending leaves skittering. Other than that, there was nothing. Everything went on as before.
Barnard grunted. "The girl is right. I will fetch Deuteria."
Sigir caught his arm.
"It is bad enough that we were saved by a wizard. We can't give aid to one."
"That's not just a wizard." Barnard shook his arm loose.
"That's Clodio. He stood in the pike wall with us, remember?"
The terror in Sigir's eyes turned to shame, and he looked at his feet, but he made no move to help. Helwaz slapped Clodio's cheeks, chafed his wrists. He did not respond.
"Help me!" she shouted at her father. "He's dying, and I don't know what to do."
Samson turned to Barnard, and the big tinker nodded. Samson cursed, and the two of them jogged toward Helwaz. Luba caught Samson's wrist.
"No! I can't lose both of you!"
"What are you doing?" Sigir shouted. "I am mayor, and I say we flee."
"To what end?" Barnard asked.
"We will be a village of brigands. The order will pursue us to the ends of the earth now. If we flee, we buy ourselves time. Nothing more."
"We will have to find a new way, all of us," Sigir pleaded. "The Kipti ply their trade from their wagons, never staying in one place for long. Perhaps in small groups, we can find other villages that will take us in. We can scatter."
"That is no life," Samson whispered.
"It is life," Sigir replied, "and now it is all we can hope for."
"Remember what you told me after you spoke for me in the gathering hall?" Samson asked.
"Aye," said Sigir, "but this is different."
"It's no different, and you know it. In your worst moment, I'd have never cursed you for a coward, Sigir."
Samson shook his head and knelt at his daughter's side. Barnard tried to join them, but Samson waved him away.
"You've no more skill here than I. Go fetch the herber."
Barnard grunted and jogged off. Sigir tried to stand before him, but the tinker brushed him easily aside.
"Where are you going? I am mayor."
"If you leave a comrade to die," Barnard didn't break stride, "then you're no mayor of mine."
Samson put his hands under Clodio's arms and lifted him. Helwas grabbed his boots, amazed at how heavy such a small man could be. Clodio's head lolled, his body as slack as if he had no bones, his skin gone gray as a corpse. Only his chest, rising and falling as fast as a rabbit's, gave any indication he was alive.
"Where do we take him?" Helwaz asked.
"The shrine," Samson said. "If the herber doesn't come, then the least we can do is pray."
Helwa's shoulders burned, and her arms shook, but she held on tight. She would not drop Clodio, not after what he had done for her in the woods, not after saving them all. She would hold on to him until her arms fell off.
"You are not going to die," she thought.
Luba stood and took a few tentative steps, stopped, hand outstretched. The rest of the village clustered closer, but all stopped behind Sigir.
"Don't be a fool, Samson,"
Sald shouted after him.
"Think of your girl," called Harald.
Samson ignored them, grunting as he half-walked, half-fell backward toward the shrine spire. The building was enormous by the standards of Lutet, its spire so high that it could be seen from atop the giant shoulder up the Hammersdown Road. It bore the golden eye of the Emperor's vigilance at its peak. A sainted palatine was painted above the double doors, hand extended, wings outstretched above his golden armor. A devil lay crushed beneath him, one of his armored feet on its neck. Samson paused to get a better grip on Clodio, then hurried up the dirt path toward the doors. Clodio jerked, suddenly going stiff, his feet tearing out of Helwa's grasp. She stumbled back, and Samson swore as the ranger's boots thudded against the earth. He tried to drag Clodio on his own, but the ranger was twitching now, his head thrashing from side to side, spit flying from the corners of his mouth, his teeth clenched so tightly that Helwa's worried they might break. Samson laid Clodio down as gently as he could. "What do we do?" Helwa's asked. Ingomer Clothier had been prone to fits when he was a boy. The only thing Helwa's could remember was that you were supposed to make sure they were on something soft, so they couldn't hurt themselves by thrashing, and to put something in their mouth to keep them from breaking their teeth. But the cold ground beneath Clodio was nearly as hard as stone, and his teeth were so tightly clenched that she wouldn't be able to get a piece of parchment between them. Samson had knelt, gripping Clodio's head between his knees, stopping him from knocking his skull on the ground. He tried to grab Clodio's flailing arms with his free hands, succeeded in grabbing one, only to have it ripped away when the other clouted him on the side of the head. Helwaz dove for Clodio's feet, stilled the drumming heels for a moment. But she was a girl of 16 winters, and Clodio's legs were strong from years of ranging. His boots rose and fell, lifting Helwaz with them, and each time she felt her grip shaken, the tips of the ranger's toes slamming painfully into her hips. At last he kicked her free, and Helwa sprawled on her back. "Help me, girl!" Samson shouted, Clodio's head still firmly gripped between his knees, reaching for his waving arms. "Get up!" Helwa jumped to her feet, her hips and stomach singing with pain where Clodio had kicked her. She had been kicked by one of Pock's mules last winter, and had worn that bruise for the rest of the season. This felt almost as bad. Clodio had pushed his wizardry too far to save them, and now he was going to die. She couldn't let that happen. She had to help him. Where was Deuteria? She cursed herself, cursed the whole damn village, standing by in their belief in the Order's lies. She thrust her hand in her pocket, drawing strength from the warm touch of Twitch's fur while she caught her breath. A sharp, stabbing pain in her finger. She yanked her hand out of her pocket, brought it up in front of her face. Two bright pinpricks of blood had appeared just below the half-moon of her fingernail. They blossomed as she watched, the crimson glowing in the dawn light before streaking down her hand. Twitch had bitten her. She sucked on her finger while she opened her pocket and looked inside. Twitch was curled on his side. Helwa's heart leapt into her throat. Was he dead? Then he thrashed his tiny head, spreading the bead of blood on his mouth out to soak into the fabric beneath him. Her blood. His body went stiff, little limbs sticking straight out, then slowly curling back in. Does he bite? Yes, but not you. Never you. Helwa's, her father shouted, in the Emperor's name, help me grab his arms. But Helwa's stood staring at the mouse in her pocket. He rolled onto his back, little arms and legs kicking into the air, tail pinned straight, the blood from her finger whipped to froth in his rapidly working jaws. A steady sound came from his mouth, low and creaking. Not squeaking, not the sound a mouse should make at all. She picked him up, lifted him out of her pocket, brought him closer to her face. Helwa's! Her father called again. Then Twitch shivered and split and changed. She bit back a scream, forced herself not to drop the tiny mouse, or whatever he was now. His tail was gone. His little nose still sniffed the air above the whiskerless snout. One eye was closed, the other opened so wide that it took up the entire side of his tiny head. The pupil was yellow, slit black down the middle like a cat's eye, wide and staring. His fur had come away in patches, leaving most of his side bare. Scales showed beneath, silver green and shining, like a garden snake made of emerald. Her pet mouse was gone. In its place was this mismatched thing. Slipped of whatever had held it together, it began to come apart in her hand. It couldn't be. Wizardry was good. It had saved her. Twitch still felt like the piece of the world that stood between her and everything that loomed around her, her night with Bessina, the knitting, the order. Samson looked at her hand, gasped. He let go of Clodio, scrambled back on his heels. It didn't matter, for Clodio had stopped twitching, was sitting up, shaking his head. He blinked, looked around, his eyes wide and confused. The ranger's voice was as dry as a creek bed in summer. Helwas, what are you tat here? Helwas tried to speak, to ask him if he was all right, to ask how to help him, but the confused look in his eyes and the twitching creature in her palm made words impossible, and in the end she only held up her arm, fingers spread to show the thing that used to be Twitch, straining and kicking in her hand. Clodio frowned. Confused, he reached out, stopping short of touching the thing that had once been a mouse. I don't understand, he said. What's this? It's Twitch, Helwas managed. The wizardry went bad somehow. Hearing Clodio speak, knowing that he could think well enough to talk to her, brought a spasm of relief, and she sobbed, a great hiccup of air that made her hand move. Clodio kept looking at the spot where her hand had been, his eyes out of focus, his words slurred like a drunken man. No. No, it's not right. It's not how it works. He raised his head, eyes clearing as he found Helwa's face. She dropped the thing that was Twitch and screamed. Clodio frowned again, his eyes glazing over once more. But all Helwas could see was his left eye, catching the thin light, white distorting into a cherry color, sliding across the surface, a smooth, unbroken shine the color of the sojourner's cloak, save one flaw. A white line, glowing as if from within, rising straight, then curving at the top like a tree bending in the wind, or the crack of a doorway just beginning to open wide. Chapter 13. Devil. From Children's Bedtime Song. I lay me down upon my bed, thinking upon the words he said, given us in his holy writ to save us from hell's fetid pit. I pray to live his holy word, and be spared of his righteous sword, and I shall never disobey. Spare me, O sacred throne, I pray. What? Clodio asked, raising a hand, reaching for her. What's wrong? No, Helwas shouted, falling back. Don't touch me. Helwas, Samson cried, reaching for her. What's wrong? Clodio turned to look at him, and Samson shouted, jumped to his feet.
"Samson!"
the ranger rasped, swung his face back to Helwa's. Over her shoulder she could hear the villagers shouting now, Sigir calling to them to get back. True to the writ, hell was coming. Clodio's eye throbbed, bulging until it was twice the size of the other. A thin trail of blood tracked its way from the corner down the side of his nose.
"What's gotten into you?" he asked. "I'm not gonna hurt you."
His right ear turned black, withered, dropped off his head, sticking to his shoulder before slowly sliding down his back and out of sight. There was a crack of thunder, the sky above them abruptly darkening, storm clouds boiling over the tops of the trees suddenly, a gray curtain thrown over the common. Helwa's heart hammered in her chest. Her breath came in whooping gasps as she took another step backward, her heel catching on a root. She sat down so hard her teeth clicked painfully, her mind screaming at her, "Stupid! Stupid! Stupid!" Clodio stood, bent toward her.
"You're hurting yourself."
His voice sounded wet, as if he were speaking through a mouthful of curds.
"Stop screaming!"
She scrambled back on her palms before flipping onto her knees, scratching them painfully on the hard ground. Samson's ink-stained hand snatched her under the elbow, yanking her to her feet and propelling her toward the knot of villagers, sidestepping now, some of them beginning to run. Helwaz saw the terror etched on their faces and felt it kindle her own. She gave into the fear and let it set her feet to running. She heard howling behind her, howling that sounded like talking, like a person calling out to her, desperate and lonely and in need of help. She hit the line of villagers at the edge of the common and burst through.
"Helwaz!"
It was an effort at speech by a mouth not made for words, a voice gargling through packed gravel. If it had been an animal, Helwaz wouldn't have been frightened. She had lived beside these woods all her life. She knew hungry animals. This was something different, sounding just enough like Clodio to shake her to her bones. She glanced over her shoulder. The thunder pealed again, and fat drops of rain began to fall. Helwaz felt them striking her face, her shoulders cold and thick.
"Helwaz!"
The thing that was Clodio croaked again. A crack appeared in its eye, working its way slowly down the center of its body. White light spilled forth, dazzling in its brightness. A sick stink came with it, powerful even from this distance. What was left of Clodio continued to move toward her, taking shambling steps, quaking arms outstretched as it split in half. The grass beneath it shriveled and died, first shrinking, then graying, and finally reducing to a thick black slime. It oozed outward as if Clodio's step infected the ground, spreading to consume root and rock and pilgrim's corpse alike, turning all the same fetid liquid black. Helwa stumbled, turned, tried to find her father, but he was lost in the press of villagers. They were backing away slowly, and she could hear pounding feet as the ones furthest back broke and ran.
Where was Basina?
She heard a wet slurp and looked back up at Clodio. No, not Clodio. Not anymore. A new thing was pushing up and out of him, stepping through the shimmering, stinking light, rolling its shoulders and shaking off Clodio as if he were an old cloak. The ranger pooled on the ground, split and ragged, like a sheet that had blown off the drying line. The thing that unfolded from inside him reared up and shrieked. She had thought such a giant would have a deep, throaty roar, but instead it cried high and piercing, like a hawk's call on sighting prey. The sound hurt her ears, sent chills through her. It was nearly as tall as the shrine spire, taller than any house in the village. Spade-shaped scales covered it, a mix of ill-looking colors, the purple of sick flesh, the yellow-white of rotten bone. Six arms ended in clawed hands, each with five fingers ending in gray claws, dirty and hooked and sharp. Her eyes skipped over the thing, so stunned by its appearance that they kept leaping from detail to detail, unable to focus. A long black dew claw sprouting below a knee the size of a tree stump. A pale body, not unlike a man's, the color of rotten fish. Rippling shoulder joints, 2, 4, 6. At last, her eyes found its face and stopped. It didn't match the stories. Helwas had always expected a man wreathed in fire, face contorted in rage, around a mouth full of sharp teeth. The teeth, at least, were sharp. They stuck out from a smaller mouth than she'd expected, sloping up as though it had been cut into the long face, a sculptor's mistake discovered too late to repair. The thing's two eyes didn't line up, one high on the forehead and the other in the space left by the rising mouth. The eyes squirmed, wriggling toward her. Each circle was a bunch of smaller white eyes, stalked and pale like poisonous mushrooms. There was no sign of a nose, only two black cuts in the center of the face. Long horns corkscrewed up from its head, arcing unevenly until they nearly met above it. The tiny mouth snapped once, twice. The eye bunches curved, narrowed. It screamed again, and the raptor cry made Helwa's ears ring. A devil. Come through the portal in a wizard's eye, just as the order the writ had warned her since she was old enough to understand. It charged, and the villagers all broke and ran, scattering in all directions. They needn't have worried. The devil arrowed straight for Helwa's, reaching as it came. It wanted her. Terror blossomed in her gut, so fierce that it overwhelmed her, boiling in her head and nearly blotting out her sight. Her body belonged to the fear now, no more under her control than the devil itself. She forgot about Basina and her father and everything other than the need to run. Helwa stretched her legs and ran like she had never run in all her days. Her legs burned, and her throat felt as if she'd swallowed a bolt of cotton, but still she ran, listening to the thundering of the devil's steps behind her. The big creature was heavier, slower, but its strides were so much longer, and she could smell it as it drew nearer. It stank of rotting leaves, the slime of dried pools, of tree trunks gone to their graves on the forest floor. The odor was deep and earthy, so thick that Helwa's gagged. The storm was coming on in earnest now, the rain falling so hard that it lashed her face, soaking her through in moments. Her pounding feet kicked up puddles of wet mud. "Don't slip! Don't slip!" she repeated to herself over and over, praying that the muddy ground would slow the devil. Judging from its steady tread and the rising stink, it wasn't. She ran like a wild animal, with no plan other than escape. But if her mind didn't know where to go, her body did. And she soon saw the rain-lashed slate roof of the tinker's workshop in the distance. Bolt and blade circled before the great doors, barking with the savage enthusiasm that only dogs can muster. Helwa sprinted through the opening, and the heat of the workshop enveloped her, blessedly warm after the run through the chilling rain. Barnard stood inside the vault door, the iron key in his hand, mouth open in shock. "Devil!" Helwa shouted. "Run!" "Helwa's!" Barnard gestured to the vault. "Get in here!" But the terror would not let her go back into that vault. Helwa's pelted past him, heading deeper into the house, but Barnard reached out and seized her wrist. His grip was as strong as an iron vise, and Helwa's nearly flew off her feet before she arrested her momentum, stopped. She tried to tell him to run, that the devil was behind her, that this was all her fault, but her long